The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tyres.
Hello, it's the Offside Rule, We Get It, podcast number 32. Yes, we've got that far along in the season. Brought to you by Continental Tyres, getting you to the game safely. Lindsay Hooper, Kate Borsay, and a very special guest for this week because it is the return of the FAWSL season. The 2016 season gets underway and we are joined by a lady who has not only played football for a very long time, but recently got 100 England caps. Ennea Luko, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be doing the Offside Rule podcast. I feel like it's been a long time, so yeah. Glad to be here. Thank you.
A bit of a reaction as well to getting your 100th England cap. What happens to those caps? Do you keep all of them?
Well, no, you actually only get caps for tournaments. So you get like one cap and then it's got loads of the different games you've played in those tournaments. But I think when you get your 100 caps, you get a nice gold one. So I'm looking forward to that. It's sort of surreal to hear it back. So when you say to me, you know, I've made 100 caps, it's a milestone in my life and for me and my family. So I'm just incredibly proud to be at this point. And I think now it's kind of like, oh, you know, I've done it and I can just, you know, enjoy the next however many years I play.
And you happen to be a part of the current champions. They did the double last season, Chelsea Ladies. We're actually here at Stamford Bridge in the Shed End. We thought that we'd make the location perfect for an audio podcast that no one gets to see where we are.
You'll just have to picture us here, beavering away, chatting away at Chelsea's. It is nice to be here, and it was great because when I got off the tube, as I said to you before we started recording, Ennea, there is a big poster of Ennea kind of running at you. So I was like, oh, it's Ennea. So, yeah, so what I love is that Chelsea really support their ladies team in terms of putting posters up, in terms of advertising what you do. They are every bit as proud of you, and so should they be, as the success behind the men's team.
Well, you can't avoid it either, because here in an edit suite right now as we're recording this, they're actually cutting a piece about the start of the season and you're laughing all the way through. I keep hearing your voice all day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm blessed to be part of Chelsea. I think it's a great football club, and it's a club that really, like you said, Kate, are just very proud of what we've achieved. We've worked very hard, I have to say, as a women's programme. Emma Hayes is really building what is a fantastic culture and a legacy here, and the club are very much supported that vision, and the players can just focus on football. And I think that's really helped us be successful, because I think when players, we all know where the women's game has come from. It's come from semi-professional, you know, paying subs when I was younger, to now where players can just focus on playing football and enjoying it and making a living. That leads to success, and I'm really proud to be part of Chelsea. And coming out of tubes and seeing your picture, it's weird, you know, it's so weird, but it's what we all dreamed of in terms of our vision for what women's football should be, women's sport in general should be, in terms of the backing and the commercial value and the visibility it gets to fans.
The Offside Rule has been a big supporter of women's football from the very beginning. We've always said that it's part of the football conversations. That does mean that we've got topics today that you're going to be indulging in as well. First of all, and this is completely inspired by you, among the weekend action as well, where we saw some pocket rockets.
I absolutely love that.
Can I just say, I like the fact that she's calling you short. Like, within the first 5 minutes, she's calling you short.
I mean, it is a fact. I'm like 5 foot nothing. But, you know, it's an advantage. You know, I've embraced it, and I'm honoured to be called a pocket rocket.
It's certainly not held you back, and it's not held these guys back either. I don't know whether at the weekend you saw, I probably went to the worst Premier League game I've been to all season. They sent me to Swansea versus Villa, last on match of the day, absolutely rightly so. But Leon Britton came on as a substitute and had a blinding performance. He's a pocket rocket. So I thought about him. He made a huge difference in that game, which was drab. Jermaine Defoe as well, who scored in the Time Weir derby. We had Mahrez, who's not the biggest of gents, is he? Scored for Leicester. So I was thinking, couple of examples each of mini men and women in football and who pull the strings. So we'll do that. Hodgson Hammond, we're going to talk about the England men's squad announcement, which happened last week. This is just for the latest round of internationals, but I suppose we're all starting to get skewered and looking towards the Euros in the summer. Some big names missing. West Ham fans went crazy on social media. Why aren't there any West Ham players who've been recognised? We'll go into that, who's missing and who should be part of the team for the summer. And ESL newbies, you'll know more about this than us, I'm sure, because you'll have seen all the signings. And do you do that? Do you keep track of who's gone where?
It's been difficult to keep track this year because there's just been so many. I feel like every time I went on Twitter, Liverpool had a new signing and Arsenal had a new signing. Like, we couldn't keep up. So I think there comes a point where you just think, oh, well, great, fine. You know, everyone else is strengthening. And we had no idea as players. We were in the dark about who we were signing. I think Emma Hayes works very secretly like that, I think, so because she knows players talk. So if we know, the whole league's probably going to know.
Are you saying if you know, the whole league would know?
No, I'm actually quite good at keeping secrets, Lindsay. But, you know, generally, I think it's best for the staff to do their work quietly, and then when the signing's done, announce it that way. I think that's the way Chelsea like to do it, and I respect that.
Well, we're going to help you if you haven't kept track. We'll give you one each to look out for. That's coming up. That's topic three.
The female take on football.
Let's get straight into Pocket Rockets then. You can choose yourself if you want to, Ellie. Would you do that?
Yeah, I quite embrace the fact that I'm small, and I think I use it as a strength. I asked one of my teammates, Niamh Fahey, the other day, I said, who do you prefer to play against? We were watching Everton the other day and I was thinking, Lukaku's just, he looks like such a handful to play against. And I asked her, I said, what kind of players do you prefer to play against? And she said, big, tall players, because it's kind of easy, you know, they're sort of more of a target, whereas the smaller players have a low sense of gravity, a lot of movement, because we have to.
It's so, an extra movement as well, isn't it? You have to look down.
Exactly. So I think it's a big strength. And in the modern game, the best players in the world, you know, my pocket rockets are, you know, Messi, say no more, he's unbelievable. Aguero, I think, is one of the best strikers in the world in terms of the way he moves, and he's just so deceiving in his power and his strength. Frank Kirby, for us, is, you know, smaller than me, I think, which I'm very happy about, because I'm not the shortest in the team. But she's, again, very, very difficult to play against. Her movement is very deceiving. It's in and out. It's quick. It's a low sense of gravity. Her balance, her shift, you know, her shift of direction, change of direction is very good. So I think in the modern game, it's actually an advantage in certain positions to be very small.
I'm going to put you on the spot here a second. I'm sure Kate will want to dive in with this as well. I don't know how much of this you will know, but modern game, you're talking about that. You're talking about stats and the science to do with it. You said yourself, pocket rocket, let's get some speed. I mean, you must track that in training. I mean, how quick? Can you give us an example of how quick you go in bursts or anything like that? And do people analyse matches and say, this is how many times you've had explosive strength and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. Stats are huge part of game analysis now and individual performance analysis. And for me, I try and make it very relevant to my performance. So, you know, how many high-speed runs am I doing? And that really will indicate how much I'm doing in terms of my position. So, for instance, you know, 0 to 5 metres, I'll be, I don't know, 5 seconds. And 0 to 20, it's X amount. So those kind of measurements are really important because it means that when you're playing, you can sort of measure the impact you're having on the team and on the game plan.
Theo Walcott's well known for being the fastest over 100 metres, isn't he, at Arsenal? Do we know who the fastest is at Chelsea Ladies?
We haven't had a race, but I'd probably back myself to be the fastest. Yeah, I think over a distance, so over sort of 60 metres, I'd probably be the quickest. But yeah, haven't had a race yet. There's a few quick ones. Gemma Davies is pretty quick. Fran's pretty quick. So I think that's what makes our front four players very, very difficult to play against, because there's skill, agility and speed.
What about in the WSL? Is there another player who you'd pick out who's known for being really quick?
I think Lucy Bronze, when she gets going, is very powerful and quick. You know, she's quite tough to play against. Who else is quick?
I thought Jade Moore was pretty quick during the World Cup. She surprised me at how quick she moved. But Jade, I don't think of her like that.
Yeah, maybe deceivingly she's quick. Nikita Paris for Man City.
Jess Clark.
They're all sort of quick players that defenders have to make sure that they're ready for that speed in behind.
Kate, who have you gone for your pocket rocket? So let's give some other examples. I know that you're going to probably go for a Liverpool player, are you?
I might do, but first of all, here's a little nugget for you. The shortest team in the league at the moment is Everton. Apparently Everton, followed by Manchester City. So the average height, if you're at Everton, is 180.5 centimetres.
Interesting that you've gone down this route, because I was talking about us recording the podcast and pocket rockets being a topic, and we started to talk about the smallest players in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Can you think of the smallest defenders? It's really difficult.
Ooh.
Any other place?
Mascherano
yes.
is very small for Barcelona, but he's very good, so
yeah.
Clearly it doesn't matter. And then obviously fullbacks are naturally always very lean and small at the moment. Mm.
Danny Rose, Nathaniel Clyne, yeah. that sort of
yeah,
player.
Centre-backs, no. I mean,
centre-backs aren't... They just have to be a tower of strength, don't they?
But Mascherano's probably the exception.
Mm. I've picked out Santi Cazorla as well, who is, according to my research, the shortest player... I could have said something else then. The shortest player in the Premier League. 1.65. He's Ickle, isn't he? Yeah. Ickle Santi. But he's good. Which just goes to show, I mean, when you bring up the list of top 10 players, there's no one shoddy there. I mean, generally, if you're small, it's a good thing. And someone had a quick look at Arsenal's performances since he's been injured. And it's no surprise. I mean, the team's going through a bit of a wobble anyway. But they've had a major downturn, really, since he picked up the injury in November. And when you look at the stats, it shows what an influential part of the squad he is. With Cazorla, they've created more chances, 6.13, and conceded less goals. Without him, they've created a lot less chances, so 4.77 chances per game and conceded more goals. So when you look at the stats as well, very much weighted in his favour. I think Squawker looked at those. But yeah, a hugely influential, tiny little player at Arsenal, but very good.
We'll come on to the ladies again in a minute. I'm sure you'll have another any. I'm going to say David Silva, though, at Manchester City first. Everyone's talking about Vincent Kompany and when he's missing, the effect it has on Manchester City. I think David Silva is just as big a player to this team. And when you think of Pep Guardiola coming in and the players that he would want to maybe build this Manchester City team around and who he'll bring in to reinforce. Because of the ankle injury, I think, earlier on this season, lots of people have said, David Silva, maybe not. He's been a bit more absent this season, a bit quieter. The difference when he's fit and he's playing, you have to hold on. He's a magician. You talk about Messi. I think David Silva's in that same framework. He rarely loses the ball, which is so key nowadays in the Premier League. He's also got that vision and that footballing brain, which is beautiful to watch. And he actually, sometimes, the things that he does, he's one of those players, I feel like he sometimes makes it look like he's doing it in slow motion.
Yeah.
Even though it's just because he's making it look so easy that you think he's got all the time in the world to do it. I did tot it up. Can you see all my maths at the top of this page here? This is since he joined Manchester City 2010. Those people thinking he's not having as good a season. Actually, he's already got 10 assists for this season, which beats some of the other seasons gone by. But overall, 60 assists. So definitely a pocket rocket, definitely a player that covers a lot of the pitch as well.
I'm a big fan of Eugenie Lesamer, the French forward, who, again, is tiny, but, you know, is so strong in the way she uses her body. Yet very difficult to play against, very technical. I appreciate her because of the way she uses her body. So it's the way she sort of manipulates defenders, lets defenders sort of get tight to her but rolls them. That kind of technical ability and just the intelligence of how she uses her body, I think, is fantastic. And she scores a lot of goals and is a key player for France. When she plays, I think they're a better team.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony Cotti from Sky Sports Soccer Saturday. And when I'm not working with Jeff Stelling and the boys, I'm listening to the Offside Rule podcast. With me not knowing anything about football, you're having a laugh, aren't you?
I call the next topic Hodgson Hammered. The hammer reference is quite important here because West Ham players have come out. I say players, the players have been quite muted about it, but Slaven Bilic has come out and said, actually, there's a couple of my players that have been seriously overlooked. I'm going to bring up one of those because it's definitely my pick. But the squad for the latest round of internationals was announced. And I'm wondering from you, Per, who would you say is a glaring miss at the moment? Who's having a brilliant season? And if you're to believe what previous managers have said, what the press tend to say, and you might agree this from the women's side of things as well, is that you should pick players who are in form.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, otherwise you're running the risk of not getting maximum performance. I think that's just obvious.
Well, you feel like it's obvious, but it feels like a mistake that's been made.
Managers have different reasons why they pick players, but I think ultimately everybody expects players to be picked on form and players should not be picked on reputation, because if you go into a major tournament wanting to win a tournament based on reputation, it's only going to get you so far. You need to have players that perform it. For me, the glaringly obvious omission is Mark Noble. I don't think there's any getting away from that. I think West Ham are looking like they might even make the Champions League. You've got a midfield that includes Dimitri Payet, who's probably arguably going to win Player of the Year or Football Writers Player of the Year, who's played alongside Mark Noble, who's made that midfield tick, and he's English. Whereas, you know, yes, I can see Danny Drinkwater's in the squad, but maybe it's a case of numbers. You know, Danny Drinkwater got in because he's top of the league and Mark Noble didn't. Maybe that's it. You know, you can't pick everybody. But I can completely understand why West Ham fans would be just a bit confused as to why they've had such a strong season, but then there's no West Ham representation in the squad.
You can understand why Mark Noble might be a bit confused as well. And the thing is, Jordan Henderson's in there, OK? So if we do a bit of a like-for-like chat here, we know that Jordan Henderson will start in that first game against Russia at the Euros, yeah? He's probably a dead cert. So what Hodgson needs to consider against Germany and against the Netherlands is how much he wants to learn. Now, I think he's been influenced a bit by the strength of the opposition, because how much will England learn against two very good footballing nations, particularly Germany? So I think he's kind of chickened out. He's given us a little bit of what we want in making sure that Jamie Vardy's there and Harry Kane's there. But if he'd had omitted either of those players, there would have been a national uproar. So I think when you look at Mark Noble, you need to consider how much you're going to learn from putting Jordan Henderson there. And then you need to look at the stats as well. Mark Noble's completed the most passes of any English player in the Premier League this season, 540. Passing accuracy, 86%. He's made more key passes than Jordan Henderson. He's made more tackles and interceptions. He's played double the number of games. So when you talk about someone deserving their place...
goes back to my point there on, then it's clearly gone down on reputation. Mm-hmm. You know, Jordan Henderson has been in the squad for a long time, mm-hmm. and, you know, Jordan Henderson has earned that spot as well. But I think for me, going into a major tournament, you want that hunger. You want those players that are desperate for the shirt, that have a lot to prove, that have performed over the course of a season. Surely you want that, because mm-hmm. they have nothing to lose. You know, for me, the other one is Aaron Lennon. You know, Aaron Lennon's having a fantastic season for Everton, is keeping Gerard Deulofeu out the team, and is the only real out-and-out winger mm-hmm. that you can think of in the England squad that gives you that width, that gives mm-hmm. you that sort of attacking direct approach against fullbacks. Otherwise, really, sometimes you're playing midfielders out of position mm. when you've not picked any definite wingers. So Aaron Lennon's another one who's been out of this England team for a long time, but he's having a great season.
And he's a pocket rocket.
So even more reason why he should be picked.
I've got Aaron Creswell, West Ham. I think Aaron Creswell is having the season of his life. Mm. It does help when you've got great players around you. But Slaven Bilic, when he's spoken about two players that he'd have in the England team, it is Mark Noble, and the other name is Aaron Creswell. Now, many people will say if Andy Carroll comes into good form, he offers you something completely different as well in attack, although I think that's a very competitive area in the England team at the moment. But in terms of left back, I think Aaron Creswell, he marginally edges it for me. I know that Danny Rose has had a good season too, mm. and Spurs have been flying, and he offers that pace, and he's another pocket rocket. But I feel that Danny Rose hasn't played as consistently, and I don't feel like he's got the defensive qualities that Aaron Creswell has shown this season. I think Aaron Creswell has made critical, important tackles and prevented goals, and that's represented points for West Ham, and they probably wouldn't be where they are if you went back over footage. So I would say Aaron Creswell.
The good thing is, though, that we're at a point now with the England pool of players that it's really competitive. Mm. And, you know, Roy Hodgson has a bit of a headache. You look at strikers, you think, oh, who's going to play? You know, Harry Kane, is it going to be Sturridge? Is it going to be Vardy? Is it going to be two of them? And that's an exciting place to be in. That's without talking about Wayne Rooney and where he's going to fit in. So I think, you know, the fact that we're having this conversation about players that didn't get into the squad who are playing so well in the toughest league in the world is a really good thing, because you're going into a major tournament knowing that that squad that's going to be picked hopefully will represent the top, I don't know, 23 players, however many players get picked, in the best league in the world, who are English. You know, that's quite an exciting thing, I think.
Before we get on to topic three, I do want to dissect a little bit more ahead of the WSL, because that's what we're going to finish on, is WSL newbies. But just in terms of changes within Chelsea, I know that you've got new training facilities. Yeah. Just bring us up to speed with what's happened. And also, since you've been playing, just give us that image of what you used to walk into and what you walk into now when you go to work.
Growing up, it was very much, you know, sometimes I got used to get changed on the train, walk around the streets of London in my Charlton kit, and people would sort of be looking at me like, oh, you know, weirdo, why is she wearing, you know, full kit? And you sort of get used to that. At Chelsea, yes, we've had changing rooms. They've never been sort of to the extent that they are now. And the great thing with the development of Chelsea women is very much we've earned it. You know, it's not been handed to us on a plate. It's been very much a development of of seeing the team grow and seeing the team win and saying, look, we need this to keep going to the next level. So now we have, you know, our own changing room, our own lockers, our own entrance, you know, our own gym that's being built, our own pitch. We now have a room dedicated for lunch, dinner and breakfast. It's just amazing. And, you know, for me, this is my fourth year and it's just amazing to see the legacy that Emma Hayes has come in and built. And she's not just a head coach. She's kind of all about leaving a legacy. So if she leaves tomorrow, that is a permanent thing that somebody's going to come in and see what Chelsea women represent in terms of the development of facilities. So I'm really proud to be part of that.
If there are some casual observers to the WSL listening, perhaps people who watch a lot more men's football and are interested to know more about the women's game, most people know about Mark Sampson, the England manager, who led a successful tournament out in Canada. And of course, there are big things expected of the England team. But if you don't know about Emma Hayes yet, you definitely will do, because she probably has twice the personality of Mark, because she's allowed to, because Mark is an England manager, so there has to be a certain amount of holding back there, I guess. But if you don't know about Emma Hayes, just describe what she's like, because she's a tour de force, isn't she? She's hilarious, she's inspiring, she's forthright.
I think what I would say about Emma is all those things you've just said, but she really doesn't take herself too seriously. I think, you know, her work is very much done privately with her staff. She's very close to her staff and her players. But when it comes to the media and the public perception, it's actually quite tongue-in-cheek. And she says that all the time, because I think it's important. I think a lot of managers try and deflect and sort of take the pressure off a lot of situations. And we have been in a lot of high-pressure situations in the last 2 years, you know, FA Cup final, the league run-in and all that kind of stuff. And she's always tried to sort of, not poke fun at it, but take the pressure off by cracking a joke here and there, but also making sure that people know the journey that we've been on and really emphasising that, because it hasn't always been easy. I think she's spoken about coming into Chelsea as manager and not finding a water bottle, you know, coming into quite an unprofessional environment and now building something that, you know, we are the current champions and being very proud of that. So I think we have a lot to thank Emma Hayes for.
One thing that she's had to shoulder for the last couple of seasons is being the only female coach in WSL 1. That's not the case this season, because Reading have got a female coach. How do you think she'll be with that now that there seems to be more coming through? Is she the sort of person that her door's open to other people who perhaps need that support, or will she be keeping one eye over her shoulder?
No, I think she's very keen to be a mentor and support other women who are looking to be coaches, who are current coaches. I know she has open communication with Kelly from Reading. We signed Frank Kirby, so naturally I think that was a long drawn out process, but I think they're friends and I think they support each other. And I know Emma has spoken off the pitch about how the game are going to create new coaches in women and leaders, managers, not just coaches, but people who can lead organisations, because that's the position she's finding herself in. She has to speak to the Chelsea board on a regular basis. That's nothing to do with coaching. That's organisational management and all the things that make you a good manager. So I would say she's a huge supporter of that progress. I don't think she enjoys being the only one. I think she wants more.
It'll be interesting to see over the years how many current first team players go into management, actually, because we've not seen a lot of that in recent years, have we? There's still been a little bit of a division between perhaps players who used to be in the game a long time ago going into management, but nothing recently. Let's talk about the She Believes Cup. What was the atmosphere like? How did you rate England's performance there? And where does that mean England are now? They had a successful World Cup despite going out in kind of horrible fashion, but you walked away with a bronze medal. So that was great for the development. But where are the team now? And just describe what that She Believes Cup was like.
Well, the She Believes Cup was a fantastic tournament because of the opposition that we played against. It's not often that you get to play US, France and Germany. We only play them in major tournaments. So that was a huge opportunity. And, you know, it's America, and America have just won the World Cup. So the fans, I think there was, you know, an average of sort of 15,000 fans at each game. The atmosphere was fantastic. In terms of our performances, I think that it was difficult because, you know, we came into the tournament wanting to win, knowing that it would be marginal games. But I think, you know, our performances against the US, was good because I think it could have gone either way. And a great goal was the difference from Crystal Dunn. You know, Germany game was unfortunate. We lost by a penalty. And the France game, we really contained them. If their finishing was better, we could have lost the game. But second half, if it went on for longer, I think we would have won the game. So it's kind of, there's a balance of feeling, I think, you know, not winning any game, wanting to go into the tournament, winning it is difficult. But I think there's progress to be made in terms of the performances. It's an element of the games that we played, the performances. But ultimately, we now need to be turning those encouraging performances into wins. That's, you know, there's no getting away from that because we are bronze medalists. On one hand, say we are currently the top European team in the world, but then the other hand, be happy with not winning.
And it's not just because I'm sat next to an England striker, but I think Mark needs to be more adventurous with his forward line now. He needs to know that you can push forward and win games with verve for him. So it's kind of having that building block from Canada, great defensive lineup, very solid in defence, solid in possession, but then trusting his front line to go and try and win the game for him. So there's stuff to do there, I think, but we'll see whether that plays out, and I really hope it does.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at what England stands for now in terms of our playing style, I think it's pretty obvious that we have a very compact defensive playing style. What we need to do now, and what was evident in the She Believes Cup just through the stats, I mean, there's no getting away from it, was that our chance creation wasn't high. We weren't having enough shots on goal and we weren't making enough entries in the box. And actually the French game, why that performance was encouraging was because we did all those things. We got into their box in the second half. We create chances. So yes, I mean, the difference between us and US and us and Germany, us and France, is that they have forwards that score goals. They have forwards that can, like Alex Morgan, that can just think about scoring goals. And I think we need to get to that point. And obviously for me as a striker, I've got to try and make sure that I'm ready to be put in that position where I am creating chances for my teammates, but also putting the ball in the back of the net.
You're ready. You're ready.
Whilst you were out there as well, you got your 100th cap. Farrah Williams got 150 England caps, pretty much the landmark of all landmarks for England men and women. A little bit about her. She's gone to Arsenal Ladies. Is this the resurgence of Arsenal Ladies of old that used to win everything?
Well, I hope not. I definitely hope not. We've got to try and make sure that's not the case. And actually, to be honest, with all respect to Arsenal, we're trying to emulate what they did, you know, in terms of winning back-to-back titles. You know, Farrah's a huge inspiration, I think, for football and a huge role model and example in football. To make 150 caps, I don't think any other player is going to achieve that, to be honest. While she's still playing, she's only going to get more caps. I think she's got a few years in her left. So what Farrah's achieved is unbelievable. And the move for her, for Arsenal, would be another great challenge. She was hugely influential in Liverpool doing well and winning titles, and I'm sure she'll be a huge influence for Arsenal, hopefully not against us.
Follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod and like our page on Facebook. Simply type in the Offside Rule We Get In. There's only one of us.
Well, with that in mind, let's talk about the new WSL season and new players that we're going to be seeing. We've got WSL newbies as our final topic. So these are players that we won't have seen before in WSL 1. So even if you're a stalwart fan and you've watched WSL since the beginning, these are going to be players that might just take you by surprise. You've got the best insider knowledge here. So who would you say is one to watch and where?
I tend to look at who I'm going to play against in terms of defenders. So I think Josephine Henning, the German defender that's come from PSG for Arsenal, I think she's going to be a great player for them and someone who's going to strengthen their back line and bring that sort of world-class experience into their team. So I think she's probably my one to watch. Kosovar Islani from Man City is going to be a creative player who's going to create chances for them as well.
She was another PSG player, wasn't she?
She was another PSG player. There's been a bit of an exodus from PSG. I think Amandine Henry's just left as well to go to Portland. So, I mean, other leagues have benefited from players leaving PSG, and I think Henning is going to be a good one for Arsenal.
What I liked about Aslani was that they dubbed her as the female Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And I think the WSL can only benefit from having this sort of character.
Yeah, well, I think she has the same background. I think she is Kosovan.
Yes.
Similar background to him. So I think it's an obvious comparison, but I think they're actually very different players. You know? Ibrahimovic is more of a target player, and Aslani's more of a pocket rocket, quite skillful, quite creative. She'll be a good signing for Man City, but one that I think the league is going to have to be aware of what she brings.
So I'll chip in with Katie McCabe, who's come from Shelbourne FC. What about that for a glamour location? She's joined the ranks at Arsenal, young player, I think she's about 20. And with Chioma going to the Americas, she's returned back to America. She's likely to be a replacement for her. And also she's been touted as potentially a Rachel Yankee. But I'm guessing that when anyone new arrives at a club, and this will happen to you in latter years, I'm sure she'll be a potential Ennio Luca, you know, she'll be like... That's the ultimate marker, isn't it? Yeah. Potential so-and-so. But she's a pretty useful player, made her mark in the pre-season already. She's a regular with the Republic of Ireland national team too, left-footed wide player. Pretty useful, and I think one to watch just because Arsenal are good at developing some of their younger players, and they'll give her everything she needs to give herself the best possible chance at doing well in WSL 1.
You're right. Niamh Fahey, who plays for us and is for Republic of Ireland as well, has spoken highly of Kate McCabe and said exactly that, that she's a good young player, hungry to succeed in the top league and has done well for Republic of Ireland. So I think a lot of Arsenal signings, to be honest, are key marquee signings. Oshuala, who's come from Liverpool, is another handful to deal with. I think what's going to be difficult for Arsenal is how all those signings blend together. I think they've probably got 10 different nationalities in their team now, including the manager, and that's challenging. I know from personal experience that can be quite challenging. So I think for us, for the opposition, it's about how we exploit that, because we as a team have been together now for 3 years, for, you know, some of the play, most of the players 4 years, and, you know, have kept the core of our team. And that really helps you when you're starting another season with new challenges. Arsenal are going to have to gel very quickly.
A team that really struggled last season and seems to have strengthened this season is Liverpool. And Reading, who've just come up. And I'm picking a couple of players for them. I'm picking strikers. Because I actually think when we look at the relegation come the end of the season, it will be down to goals. It always is, isn't it? And I always think that if you've got someone who can naturally score goals for you, you can always strengthen everything else. You can work on it in training, can't you? How to be tighter at the back. But you can't get that instinctive finish. So I've picked out a couple. I've picked Emma Lund, who's from Sweden. She signed from Norway's Lillestrøm and she's gone to Liverpool to score goals for them. It's difficult to say at this point, isn't it? Having not seen her play before and not seen how she'll adjust to life in WSL and to English football. But I've got high hopes. I think that she might be the sort of player that will get goals for Liverpool. And with Natasha Dowie going out to Doncaster Bells, that's what they're going to need. So there's a lot resting on her. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've signed a Dutch striker as well. I was speaking to Hedvig Lindvall about her, this our Swedish keeper, and she was saying, yeah, very good player, great character as well, you know, really hardworking. And I think that's going to be important for Liverpool to really sort of grind down teams. I think their pitch is a leveller, so they'll always get points up at that pitch for teams that can't cope with it. But I think it's a similar situation to Arsenal. So many signings from so many different places. Mm. They need to gel quickly because the WSL is quite unforgiving in the fact that if you drop points, you need to go on a run to get back up the league. You know, you've got to start strong. I think Man City found that out last year where they started slow, finished incredibly strong, but it wasn't enough. Mm. And I think we started very strong, were unbeaten up until the mid-season break, the World Cup break. Actually, looking back, it was a difference. You know, we won the league by 2 points. Mm. So I think, you know, where you have a brand new team of 8-9 players, you've got to get points on the board and start strong because otherwise you've got to gel very quickly.
My other striker, and she actually scored in the last round of the FA Cup, was Jay Boaseo, who plays for Reading. Have you come up against her quite a few times?
She caused us problems, actually. Our first game back after the World Cup was Bristol at home, and she scored against us, and she was a pain, really, to deal with and a problem for our defenders, and scored, I think, the winning goal against Notts County So for Bristol. So she's a handful. She's a problem to play against, and quick, strong, good in the air. So I think for a team like Reading, who will be looking to stay up, she'll bring them goals. I think similar to how, you know, Beth Mead did for Sunderland last year, I think she was the reason they stayed up, with no disrespect to the rest of their team. but Beth Mead was the highest scorer in the league and Sunderland happened to stay up. I think it's key. So, you know, for Boho Seyo, I think she'll be important for Reading as well.
And the one thing I've noticed with her as well is because she's so young, she's maturing all the time and bringing that to her game, and that could be crucial. And thank you so much for joining us this week.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you. And it's been a while, hasn't it, since I was back on. So I'm glad we crammed a lot in.
It has been a while, but it was the Champions League final and it was at Stamford Bridge.
Oh my God, yeah, that was the last time. That was amazing. That was an amazing night. Hopefully one day we'll be playing in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
And if it's here, oh my gosh, how amazing would that be?
Good luck for Thursday. So this comes out on Thursday. So if you're listening on Thursday, our lovely Offside Rule Pod clan, try and keep abreast of Chelsea Ladies. You meet Donny Bells, who are playing in WSL1 for the first time Thursday evening. Mm-hmm. Courtney Sweetman-Kirk, someone I'm looking forward to seeing play in the WSL1, should be interesting. So good luck for that game.
Yeah, and I must also mention that behind the scenes, a lot of our web writers, editors have been working really hard ahead of the new season. So there's brand new articles. You can learn a lot about the WSL this season if you haven't already checked it out. Go to offsiderulepodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod and give us a like on Facebook. We'll post things on there too.
Yeah, we've got season previews, by the way, for every single team in the WSL up on our website, so check them out.
Yes! Oh, yes! The Offside Rule We Get It is brought to you by Continental Tires.